on the National Catholic Register. This is Register Radio, bringing light and clarity to the news and topics that affect your life.
This week, a panel of Australian appellate judges rejected Cardinal George Pell's appeal of the sexual abuse conviction that sent him to prison earlier this year. Now what happens? For Register Radio this week, we talked to Register Rome correspondent Edward Penton, who has the news details and reactions from Down Under and the Vatican. And then, what's the latest from Hong Kong? And why did Planned Parenthood opt out of Title X federal funding this week? We find out in a news roundup in the second half of the show. I'm Jeanette DeMello, editor-in-chief of the National Catholic Register. I'm joined by my co-host, Matthew Bunsen, the senior editor for the Register. On August 21st, the conviction of Cardinal George Pell was upheld by the Court of Appeals in Victoria, Australia. By a majority of 2-1, the Court of Appeals dismissed Cardinal George Pell's appeal against his conviction for sexual abuse. That means he'll continue to serve his sentence of 6 years imprisonment. He has the opportunity to appeal this, but we don't know if he will do so. We're joined by Edward Penton, our Rome correspondent, who has been following this news from the very beginning. Hello, Edward.
Hi, Jeanette. Hi, Matthew. Good to be back.
So this is really a terrible blow to the Cardinal's supporters, and many people see this as a miscarriage of justice. Edward, you've been in touch with Cardinal Pell's lawyers and the Archdiocese of Sydney, where he served. What do they say about the latest ruling by the judges?
Well, of course, they're very dismayed by it. They were hoping for the best. They've been optimistic, of course, before, so they knew that there's a chance that that optimism would be dashed, and of course it was. And but they were really hopeful that this appeal would win, that the judgment would be overturned. They felt that they had a strong case, that the hearing last in June went very well for the cardinal and his team. They felt that he was, you know, the evidence wasn't there. They felt. And he wasn't convicted beyond all reasonable doubt, and they felt that was a strong grounds for his acquittal. So they're very dismayed, but then they haven't lost hope, and they're hoping they're certainly considering appealing to the High Court, which is the sort of Supreme Court of Australia. But the chances of that winning are pretty remote, I understand. They believe they have a fair chance of winning that appeal, but many lawyers that I've spoken to feel that the chances are pretty slim.
Yes, you know, I mean, I started off saying we don't know if he'll appeal. Well, he certainly could, and we leave that open, available to him. But that's the same thing that I've heard. It just seems like it's very dim chance that he would win. He did have a strong case, everyone thought. So, you know, the legal thought was that he had a very strong case. What were the points of his appeal?
Right. Well, there were three points. Firstly, that they felt that the arraignment was not done properly. It wasn't done within the sort of protocols that have been agreed. There was a video that was strongly helpful for the defense that they wanted to show to the jury that wasn't shown in the closing moments of the trial. But the main one was that they didn't believe he was convicted beyond all reasonable doubt. So they felt that there was reasonable grounds for his acquittal, because there just wasn't enough evidence for his conviction. But the interesting thing is that it was, as you say, it was a 2-1 majority decision. The one who dissented believed that although the other two grounds were technical and he agreed with them, the one about not having good enough evidence, he fully agreed with. And that's why he couldn't agree with his judgment. And this is why they have grounds, they feel, to take it to the High Court. And that's why they're considering that.
Yes, I'm sorry to cut you off there, but this judge who dissented from the majority opinion, he believed that the jury would have had a doubt based on the evidence that was presented. That so He felt like the evidence was not strong enough for the jury to make that decision beyond a reasonable doubt. So that is pretty significant. It's kind of crazy that three judges can look at the same material and come to such different conclusions over evidence. But that is certainly what has happened here.
Just to add that Mark Weinberg, the dissenting judge, it's important to point out that he's the most senior of the three, the most experienced. He's actually a retired federal judge. And he's got a lot of experience and he's very respected. And so his dissent carries even more weight. He also says that, you know, he greatly respects the other two and so was very careful about making sure that he was making the right decision by dissenting. So he looked at it extra closely, and having extra closely looked at it, he came to the same conclusion. So he's absolutely convinced, it seems, that Cardinal Pell has been convicted without enough evidence.
Mm-hmm. Well, and to go back to the trial briefly, we had comments from the presiding judge, Judge Kidd, that certainly there is a great deal of hostility toward Cardinal Pell. And one of the things that's been asked by a lot of the critics of this whole process is it possible now for someone like Cardinal Pell, given the sex abuse crisis, given the hostility toward the church, to get a fair trial under this current atmosphere?
That's a good point, Matthew, and this is something I've heard, that there is a lot of fear now, not only among Catholics out there in Australia, but also just general those who consider themselves conservatives. They feel that there is a danger that they're going to be sort of lynched by a sort of mob justice, and they feel that there isn't going to be a guaranteed fair trial. They say they're going to have to walk on eggshells. They're not going to speak out as much as they would because they fear that they're just going to be framed or set up or whatever. So yes, there's a real concern about that in Australia. But of course, it does come in the context of a lot of anti-Catholic sentiment over there, especially following the abuse cases, which have been many. And also they have a history in Australia of a sort of Protestant history, an Anglican one. There's been a history of sort of anti-Catholic animus, which I think is also coming out now. So you've got all of that into play. And then, of course, there's Cardinal Pell's own personal history, which I think he did create enemies when he was in Australia for different reasons. But I think that's all sort of coming home to roost as well. So all of these things have sort of amounted to this very controversial and some say unjustified decision on the 21st of August.
So there are many voices here in the United States, commentators, George Weigel among them, Father Raymond D'Souza, who writes regularly for the Register, who have written extensively with what they believe are injustices here. Father D'Souza's latest piece talks about the ring of truth and just the implausibility of the case itself. Without going into details, I mean, the cardinal has been accused of these this sexual abuse immediately after the mass. It would have been his first mass, Sunday mass, in his in the cathedral as the new archbishop. Apparently it happened right after with two choir boys in the sacristy, and that's where a lot of the implausibility exists. Father D'Souza makes the point, and he's made it many times, that the Victoria police had really been out to get Cardinal Pell for quite some time. Edward, are you up to speed on what that line of argument is regarding the police and perhaps not very credible investigations?
Yes, well, that started back in, I think, 2013, that the police sort of decided that they would look into this. They had no real evidence or anything to go on. And they sort of appealed to anyone if they've heard anything. So that's kind of how it all started. And then there have been allegations since then of corruption within the Victoria Police, and that there's possibly witnesses being paid off. There's also the allegations that there's possibly a Vatican connection, the old guard, who weren't happy about Cardinal Pell's financial reforms, and that They were keen to get him out of the Vatican, and this was a way to do it. So there's all sorts of theories, and nothing has been really proven, but there have been a lot of questions raised about how this investigation was conducted and how it led to this arraignment and for him going back to Australia. And also, it's important to point out that he actually didn't have to go back to Australia. He volunteered to go back in 2017 to clear his name because he was so convinced, of course, of his innocence. And he could have stayed and pleaded diplomatic immunity because he's prefect of a Vatican dicastery, and so he could have stayed here in Rome, but he didn't. And of course, we know what happened next. So I think that's important to point out there, that sort of background to the case.
There was a statement from the Vatican. There's basically support from the Holy Father for Cardinal Pell, and they were the statement very supportively pointed out that the cardinal maintains his innocence, but at the same time they said we respect the decision of the court. But the Vatican is also going to be conducting their own investigation. Where does that stand?
Well, at the moment that's on hold until they released another statement as well on the day of the judgment, and they said that's on hold until this procedure of appeals has reached a conclusion. So that's not going to happen. But I think it's interesting to point out that the Pope and the Vatican are sort of withholding judgment, whereas with McCarrick, Theodore McCarrick, they were very quick to see, once they saw the evidence, they quickly brought him to trial, and that was all dealt with. So there's been arguments saying, well, how is it that people are very convinced of the cardinal's innocence? And yet with McCarrick, they were quick to jump on his guilt. But then the Vatican was very sort of convinced of McCarrick's guilt from as soon as the evidence was known. So there aren't really comparable cases. But what is interesting is that whereas McCarrick was found guilty and laicized, he's still a free man. But Cardinal Pell, of course, is now in jail, even though there are serious doubts about his conviction.
Yes, that's a very, very good point, and that's where the travesty of justice comes into play here. Mm. You know, we're almost out of time, but I want to make sure that our listeners know that you wrote a story this week on this very topic, and of course you've covered this. There's a timeline that you have drafted just to show the events of this case. The title of the story online at ncregister.com is "Despite Losing His Appeal, Cardinal Pell Maintains His Innocence." And, you know, the subhead of that is that this sent shockwaves. It shocks many of his supporters. And I wanted to end on just a note, Edward, about how this has divided many people. It seems that there are many people who are supporting him and many people who are against him. What are some of the most surprising? Who are some of the most surprising supporters?
It's sort of across the board. But I think what is interesting, too, is that in Australia, I certainly heard that the divisions are so great. But the divisions are along very much sort of political lines, that those who are sort of more liberal, if you like, although we don't like to use those terms, of course, but those who are perhaps more liberal have taken very much the victim's position on this and are very convinced of Cardinal Pell's guilt, while the conservatives are very much questioning it, no less concerned about the victim, but they're questioning the authenticity of the conviction. So I think that's the interesting part of this, that it's sort of become rather politicized and made it down into sort of ideological lines rather than what the truth is.
Very interesting. Edward, thank you for covering this. We look forward to hearing whether or not the Cardinal will pursue an appeal to the High Court. When we come back, Matthew and I will talk about more news of this week, including the large protests in Hong Kong, large meaning a million people gathered in Hong Kong to protest the government there. More when we return.
Have you heard who's reading the Register? Why, it's Matthew Bunsen.
The National Catholic Register is that rarest of institutions in Catholic media, striving always to be faithful, orthodox, timely, and dedicated to journalistic excellence. Catholics know they can always depend on the Register for the news they need to know from an authentically Catholic perspective.
For a 3-month free subscription to the National Catholic Register, go to ncregister.com and click on the 3 months free banner.
Let's return to Register Radio on EWTN.
Welcome back. I'm Jeanette DeMello, Editor-in-Chief of the National Catholic Register, and I'm with Matthew Bunsen, my co-host and my senior editor at the Register. Our roundup this week is quite intense. It's been an intense week in August.
Well, yeah, we can refer to it as the August smorgasbord.
Absolutely. I mean, usually the first few weeks of August are a little bit slower, and then things begin to pick up as school starts and all of that. But this has just been intense. Of course, the Cardinal Pell story is generating, again, that word, intense interest. Kevin Knight, our blog editor, has done a nice roundup of reactions here in the United States, especially. It's called What People Are Saying About Cardinal Pell Today. And that was put online on August 21st, the day, I guess it's really our day that the decision was made. But aside from the Pell story, again, across the world, terrible news in Hong Kong. I mean, for months now, there have been these protests, historic protests, over an extradition bill. And I think the largest of these protests was a million people. I'm going to let you talk a bit about this bill and why so many people are concerned.
Well, the bill itself is described as the Fugitive Offenders and Mutual Legal Assistance in Criminal Matters legislation. I know that's a mouthful. But basically what it does is it is going to expand or increase the number of countries to which extradition from Hong Kong might apply. Now, one would say, okay, that's a nice legal thing to have happen. But the implications are that in that list is mainland China. Now, logically, you would say, well, isn't Hong Kong part of China? That's absolutely true. But under the handover agreement with the British government in 1997, remember, Hong Kong was a one-time British colony, they were guaranteed in Hong Kong to have the designation as a special administrative region, the SAR. So in other words, they're part of communist China, but they were granted a surprisingly large degree of autonomy. That includes control over their own legal system. And the one thing that no one wants under this system that's called one country, two systems for Hong Kong is for extradition to be happening for anyone charged with being a dissident. That can include Catholics and Christians who violate different laws, to be extradited to mainland China, where they have essentially a very different set of legal principles, and obviously there are pretty severe differences between Absolutely. The rights for the accused.
Right, right. So that makes sense as to why there have been so many Christian groups involved in these protests, and especially in the early days, but throughout, and Catholic, you know, Catholics have had a great role as well. I know Catholic News Agency talked recently to a Catholic student. A students group. It's called Hong Kong Federation of Catholic Students, and they were talking about exactly what this means for Catholics. Matthew, you have written for us about the threats of communist China in this current administration, this current regime for Catholics and for Christians in general. Let's provide context as to why people are concerned that communist China will now have control over Hong Kong.
Well, think of it this way, that we have been documenting for many, many years the persecution of the Catholic Church, Christians in general, across all of China. Now, that's part of the what's known as a sinicization, or making more Chinese, Chinese culture, in particular, Chinese communist vision for culture. And this has cut across all of the religious groups, but in particular, the Catholic Church has been singled out largely because Catholic leaders, the bishops there, and the priests are loyal to Rome and are supposed to be. And so that control then is part of this Vatican-China agreement, and it's very complicated. We still don't know all of the details. Hong Kong is slightly different. The church in Hong Kong enjoys many of the same types of freedoms that were guaranteed to Hong Kong under that SAR, that Special Administrative Region. And there is immense worry that should Hong Kong fall more and more under the control of the Chinese legal system, but also the Chinese Communist Party that actually has oversight over the religious groups in China, that all of those rights are going to be lost. But then there's that other important calculus here, that as Edwin Chow, that the acting president of the Chinese students group that you were talking right. about, has pointed out, and others have pointed out, many people in Hong Kong help to promote and help the church in mainland China. They could suddenly find themselves being arrested for right. illegal activity and then sent off, extradited to mainland China. So this is a very dangerous potential situation for Catholics in particular. And we're talking about 580,000 Catholics.
Right, right. And just to define what happens in China, I mean, it's messy. The Catholic Church in China is a messy situation, but we've written about it as being an official church, a Catholic church that has the support of the communist government, and a somewhat underground church. Some people don't like these terms, but these are the terms that are often used. An underground church that's loyal to Rome. And there have been some negotiations in the last year on the part of the Vatican, an agreement that has, in many people's views, yielded more control to the government, the communist government, on the selection of bishops. And again, this is why there's so much concern, because oftentimes the underground church does not have the support it needs there from the government, and so it's left to aid groups to support them, and that often happens from the vantage point of Hong Kong. So yes, this is a situation that needs the Register's attention and attention from news outlets across the globe, and also the prayers of people across the globe. I just wanted, this relates to China, Matthew, but it's not related to the Hong Kong situation. But we have this review of a documentary written by Deacon, the review is written by Deacon Stephen Graydonis. It's called One Child Nation is the documentary. And Nanfu Wang is the woman who produced this. She is American, Chinese American, had a child, and she was raised, she had a child in the United States. And when she had this child, she started to have just memories of her own childhood in China, and remembering her mother's stories about the rule that you can only have one child, and what happens to so many children because of that population control that the Chinese government inflicts on its people. Very interesting review of One Child Nation. So I encourage our listeners to check out ncregister.com and see Deacon Stephen's review of it, and also our editorial on Hong Kong. We got lots to talk about, and we just spent a lot of time talking about Hong Kong. Matthew, some changes on the Title 10 front, which sometimes when you say Title 10, people have no idea what we're talking about. But let me put it this way. Planned Parenthood isn't going to be receiving as much federal funding. Why?
Well, for Title 10 is the only federal grant program that's dedicated essentially exclusively to providing comprehensive so-called family planning and preventive health services. Now, there has been a new administration rule under the Trump administration called the Protect Life Rule that bars recipients of federal funds from Title 10 from referring women for abortions. It also prevents participating groups from, as they say, co-locating. In other words, you can't share with abortion clinics. And then it also requires a very stringent financial separation of the government-funded programs from those that actually carry out abortions. So Planned Parenthood made the decision to walk away from $60 million a year in federal mm-hmm. funding. That's about the estimates are that they receive anywhere from $400 to $500 million a year, perhaps more. So this is about 15% of its annual funding. Some would say that's a tiny amount compared to what they get, but $60 million is still pretty significant. Why? Because they simply do not want to participate in this. And it answers a couple of key questions, like what is the priority of Planned Parenthood? Is it health care, which is what the former president, Dr. Liana Wen, was trying to push? Or is it all about abortion? And I think we have our answer.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it seems as though this may just be a way of garnering attention before, you know, what's expected to be a very contentious election season. I mean, is this a way for gaining votes?
Oh, I think so. I think part of the calculus for getting rid of Leanna Wen was to double down on the political side, because she saw Planned Parenthood really, from her mind, as a healthcare provider. They see themselves really as an abortion provider and a political organization. And opting out of this is an opportunity for them then to say that they're being persecuted. Now, the Department of HHS actually has talked very openly about the fact that Planned Parenthood was not particularly honest in how they dealt with the government. But as they said, it's that they're actually choosing to place a higher priority on the ability to refer for abortion instead of continuing to receive federal funds to provide a broad range of acceptable and effective family planning methods and services to clients in needs of those services. Now, we disagree with the contraceptive mentality.
Right.
But this tells you what those priorities are and why they were willing to walk away.
Right, right. And you know, Title X has been a cause of consternation, I guess, for Catholic groups altogether, because it's very difficult for Catholic groups to take part in or you know, apply for grants for those funds because of the requirement to administer contraception. Some groups, like the Obria group, have tried to find ways around that, I suppose, by partnering with groups who do provide contraception. And, hey, that's fine. I think we've written about that, and that can be found at ncregister.com. We're all out of time, so I'm just going to mention Victor Gaitan has a wonderful piece about Cardinal Ortega, who died in late July. He was the Cardinal Archbishop of Havana for many years. A wonderful read. So I encourage our listeners to go to ncregister.com for more news, analysis, and commentary. Check out the National Catholic Register in print and online. Thanks for joining us here on Register Radio. We're on EWTN. For Matthew Bunsen and our producer, Jeff Burson, I'm Jeanette DeMello. Until next week, God bless you.